Krajem oktobra prošle godine na poziv Biblijskog instituta Pravoslavni bogoslovski fakultet u Beogradu posjetio je profesor dr. Konrad Schmidt, profesor starozavjetne biblistike i istorije ranog judaizma Teološkog fakulteta Univerziteta u Cirihu i trenutno jedan od vodećih svjetskih starozavjetnika. Tom prilikom on je održao predavanje na temu ko je napisao Toru, a ovo predavanje slušat ćemo u večerašnjoj katedri.
Poštovane kolege, imam neobičnu čast da vam najavim profesora Konrada Schmidta, profesora sa Cirihskog univerziteta, trenutno po mišljenju mnogih kolega, sa kojima ja sam saglasan, profesor Schmidt je možda najznačajniji starozavjetnik u svijetu. To je naš prijatelj, mi na Bogoslovskom fakultetu, Biblijskom institutu, imamo partnerske odnose sa Cirihom. Prije nekoliko godina smo bili u gostima kod njih, tada smo se i dogovorili da profesor Schmidt dođe da održi jedno predavanje, odnosno dva predavanja, da upozna malo našu javnost, našu zemlju, kulturu, crkvu. On je vrlo rad da to sve prihvatio i odazvao se našem pozivu. On će večeras održati jedno predavanje na temu kako je napisana, ili ko je napisao Toru. Vjerojatno je bilo preciznije reći kako je napisana Tora, ali nema veze. Naslov ne znači mnogo. Inače, profesor Schmidt stručnjak za ovu oblast, on se bavi nastankom biblijske literature i u kontekstu bliskoistočne antičke literature, tako da ćete imati priliku da čujete jedno predavanje od čovjeka koji možda u ovom trenutku te stvari u svijetu najbolje zna. Predavanje će biti prevođeno. Poslije njegovog predavanja, naravno, otvorit ćemo diskusiju i pitanja. Ako imate bilo kakvo pitanje, nemojte se ustezati, slobodno pitajte profesore, jako raspoložen da vam da neki odgovor. Hvala vam što ste došli u velikom broju i što ste ispoštovali i nas, i fakultet, i profesora Schmidta, i želim vam da uživate u ovom lijepom predavanju.
Thank you very much. It's an honor and a privilege to be here, and I'm very grateful to my friends from Belgrade that they invited me, and I'm looking forward to talking to you tonight.
Hvala vam puno, velika mi je čast što sam ovdje, zahvaljujem se svim prijateljima u Belgradu. Velika je čast i privilegija biti ovdje.
My talk today is about the topic who wrote the Torah? And there was always a very simple and easy answer to that question given by the tradition.
Moje večerašnje predavanje se zove ko je napisao Toru. I predanje ili tradicija je oduvek pokušavala da da jednostavan odgovor na ovo pitanje.
Moses.
Mojsej.
But if we look into the Torah, the first five books of the Bible itself, then we can see that these five books do not claim to have been written in total by Moses.
Međutim, ukoliko pogledamo prvih pet knjiga Biblije, odnosno Petoknjižje, možemo vidjeti da se u njima nigdje eksplicitno ne tvrdi da je Mojsije autor ovih knjiga.
Of course, the Torah mentions in several places that Moses wrote down something, but the Torah never says it was written in toto by Moses himself.
Naravno, u Tori se na nekoliko mjesta navodi da je Mojsej napisao određene delove Petoknjižja, ali se nigdje ne navodi da je on u celosti napisao.
The six instances where the Torah says that Moses has written down something are these six passages.
Ovo je šest navoda u kojima se navodi da je Mojsej napisao određene delove Tore.
So in Exodus 17 it is said that Moses wrote down how the battle against Amalek went on.
Dakle, u izlasku 17.14 se navodi da je Mojsej napisao izveštaj o bitci protiv Amalika.
In Exodus 24 it is said that Moses wrote down the three chapters of the so-called covenant code, which is a law collection beforehand.
U izlasku 24.4 se navodi da je Mojsej napisao tri poglavlja.
And in Exodus 34:28 we can read that Moses wrote down the words for the second set of tablets with the Decalogue.
U izlasku 34:28 se navodi da je Mojsej napisao drugi deo zapovesti Božjih.
Numbers 32 we can read that Moses wrote down some of the stations during the wandering in the wilderness.
U brojevima 33:2 se navodi da je Mojsej zapisao neke od stanica na njihovom lutanju kroz pustinju.
And in Deuteronomy 31:9 it is said that the Deuteronomic law, that is somehow the laws that are contained in the last of the five books of Moses, that these were being written down by Moses.
U ponovljenim zakonima 31:9 se navodi da je Mojsej taj koji je zapisao ovu kolekciju zakona.
And Deuteronomy 31:22 looks forward to Deuteronomy 32, the so-called Song of Moses, and this also should have been written by Moses.
Takođe i u ponovljenim zakonima 31:22 se nalazi pesma Mojsijeva koju je takođe trebalo da je napisao Mojsij.
So the Torah doesn't claim to have been written by Moses himself, and the question is who then wrote it?
Kao što možemo da vidimo, Petoknjižje ili Tora nigde ne tvrdi da je Mojsej napisao u potpunosti sve delove, ali ako prihvatimo da on zaista nije napisao sve delove, ko onda jeste?
I was part of a research group that was active in Jerusalem in 2012-13 and we produced this volume here, 1200 pages. And the answer also here, who wrote the Torah, is basically, we don't really know.
U periodu 2012-2013. Profesor Schmid je bio deo istraživačke grupe koja je radila u Jerusalimu. Jedan od rezultata njihovog istraživanja je i ovaj naslov koji možete da vidite, na nekih 1200 strana, i odgovor koji se unutra nalazi je da ni oni ne znaju ko je tačno napisao Toru.
So if we approach this question, who wrote the Torah, we need to make one distinction that is absolutely fundamental for every historical approach to the Bible.
Ukoliko hoćemo da postavimo pitanje ko je napisao Toru, moramo da napravimo jednu distinkciju koja je važna prilikom svakog...
That we need to make one distinction that is absolutely crucial for a historical approach to the Bible.
Da, jednu distinkciju koja je ključna za istorijski pristup biblijskom tekstu.
And this is the distinction between historical and biblical Israel.
I to je razlika između istorijskog i biblijskog Izraela.
We can also talk of this distinction as the distinction between the time of the narrative and the time of the narrator.
Ovu distinkciju, dakle, možemo posmatrati kao razliku između vreme samog narativa i vreme naratora.
If we, for the Pentateuch, for the Torah, ask about the time of the narrative, then the Torah plays out in a scenery that is settled somewhere in the late second millennium BCE. Or let's say the scenery, somehow the scenery of the biblical narrative plays out in the second millennium BCE.
Da, događaji, dakle, se dešavaju u drugom milenijumu pre Hrista.
But the time of the authors of the Torah is much later.
Ali vreme samih autora, dakle, je dosta kasnije.
And the time of the author, this is something that I now want to establish in my talk.
I upravo vreme, o vremenu u kome su autori stvarali ovaj tekst, će profesor Smith govoriti u svom predavanju.
I have three chapters. First, we need to establish the textual evidence of the Pentateuch. What is our text?
Ovo predavanje će biti formirano u tri dela. U prvom delu će govoriti o samom tekstu Petoknjižja, odnosno na osnovu čega će on donositi određene zaključke.
The second chapter will be what are actually the socio-historical conditions for the development of the Pentateuch.
U drugom delu će govoriti o socio-istorijskim uslovima koji su u kojima se razvija, odnosno u kojima je nastajao tekst Pentateuch.
And the third chapter will deal with the specific ideologies, or if you will, the specific theologies of the Torah within their specific historical context.
Treći deo predavanja će se baviti ideologijama ili teologijama Petoknjižja u njihovim specifičnim istorijskim kontekstima.
If we look or ask first about the textual evidence of the Pentateuch, then we first have to say the oldest complete Torah that we have stems from the year 1008 AD.
Ono što bi trebalo na početku reći kada govorimo o tekstualnim svedočanstvima Petoknjižja jeste da je najstariji rukopis Petoknjižja zapravo iz 1008. godine posle Hrista.
So this is first of all quite a serious problem. The oldest text of the Torah is a medieval text.
Ovo je već samo po sebi problem zbog toga što je najstariji tekst Tore zapravo srednjevekovni tekst.
And we for with some arguments we claim that this text is actually 1000 or even 2000 years older than its earliest attestation in a specific manuscript.
Ovo je naročito problematično zato što mi u određenim slučajevima tvrdimo da je tekst Petoknjižja 1000 ili čak i 2000 godina stariji od naše najstarije rukopisne tradicije.
So, is this a reliable starting point? Is this somehow a reliable basis for our scientific work with the Torah?
Postavlja se pitanje da li je ovaj rukopis pouzdano svedočanstvo na osnovu koga možemo donositi određene zaključke o Tori.
I think that this the situation is not so desperate.
Čini se da je situacija ipak nije toliko loša.
So first of all we have the Septuagint which brings us which takes us back some 5 or 6 centuries closer to the biblical text.
Pre svega imamo Septuagintu koja nas vraća nekih 5 ili 6 vekova unazad od ovog rukopisnog svedočanstva.
Here you have a picture of the oldest Bible in Greek, the so-called Codex Sinaiticus, and you can have a look at the original or of a very good somehow photograph of all the pages under this web address here.
Na ovoj fotografiji možete vidjeti najstariji prepis Biblije, radi se o grčkom tekstu Sinajskog kodeksa.
Of course, this is a translation into Greek, but for the Torah, for the original, we can somehow say how the Hebrew Vorlage, the Hebrew original behind it looked like, and this seems to be very similar to the Codex Leningradensis that we just saw beforehand.
Naravno, ovdje se radi o grčkom tekstu, međutim, kada je reč o Petoknjižju, mi možemo da rekonstruišemo tekst koji se nalazi, jevrejski tekst koji se nalazio u osnovi ovog prevoda i čini se da je on jako sličan Leningradskom kodeksu koji je najstariji zapis Tore.
If we look at smaller fragments, then we come even a little bit more closer to the biblical text.
Ako obratimo pažnju na manje fragmente teksta, onda možemo da se još više približimo izvornom vremenu kada su tekstovi nastali.
Until 1947, this was the oldest textual witness of the Torah that we possessed.
Sve do 1947. godine ovaj fragment je bio najstarije pisano svedočanstvo biblijskog teksta.
This is the so-called papyrus Nash, discovered in 1902. It dates to around 100 BC.
Ovo je takozvani papirus Nash, on je otkriven 1902. godine i on se datira negde u period jednog oko 100 godina pre Hrista.
And it contains elements from Deuteronomy 5 and Deuteronomy 6, the Decalogue and the Shema Israel.
On sadrži delove iz ponovljenih zakona 5 i 6, molitva Ču Izraelju i Dekalog.
1947, the situation changed with the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls here near the settlement of Qumran.
Situacija se promenila 1947. godine otkrićem Qumranskih spisa.
In Qumran, nine or remnants of 900 scrolls were detected, and out of these 900, about 250 pertained to biblical texts.
U Qumranu je pronađeno oko 900 fragmenata različitih tekstova, a od tih 900 250 se odnosi na biblijski tekst.
Only very few texts were preserved in an intact way. Here is an example from the scroll of Isaiah.
Samo nekolicina tekstova je ostala dovoljno očuvana kako bi bili čitljivi. Jedan od njih je i ovaj na slici, to je primer knjige proroka Isaije.
Most of the fragments were only handed down in a very poor state, in very small fragments that were about this size.
Velika većina fragmenata je u jako lošem stanju pronađena i većina ih je bila jako male veličine.
The fragments of the Pentateuch are now very easily accessible in this book from Eugene Ulrich, the Biblical Qumran Scrolls.
Svi, dakle, dobro očuvani fragmenti iz Qumrana su vrlo lako dostupni u ovoj knjizi koju vidite iza od Eugene Ulricha, spisi, biblijski Qumranski spisi.
They cover about 5-10% of the text of the Torah.
U njima se nalazi od 5-10% teksta same Tore.
The interesting question now is, of course, how close or how far away are these very ancient texts that belong to the 2nd and the 1st century BC? How far or how close are these texts from the Codex Leningradensis of the Middle Ages?
Pitanje koje se sada nameće je koliko su ovi očuvani biblijski tekstovi slični, odnosno koliko su različiti u odnosu na srednjevekovni tekst Leningradskog kodeksa.
And the interesting thing is that they are very close to this Codex Leningradensis.
Zanimljiva činjenica je da su oni izuzetno slični ovom kodeksu.
This is an example of a Genesis scroll with the first 5 verses of Genesis 1.
Ovo je primjer, dakle, prvih 5 stihova knjige Postanja.
And in red you have the text of Genesis 1:1-5 that is attested in this fragment.
U crvenom bojom je označen tekst koji je sačuvan i u ovom fragmentu iz Qumrana.
And in this text that this fragment attests, there is not a single difference to the Codex Leningradensis.
I u ovom fragmentu, dakle, ne postoji ni jedna jedina razlika u poređenju sa Leningradskim kodeksom.
So this shows that apparently the transmission of the Hebrew text from Qumran to 1000 AD, the time of the Codex Leningradensis, was actually very trustworthy.
Ovo pokazuje da je sam prenos teksta od perioda Qumrana pa sve do nastanka Leningradskog kodeksa bio zapravo jako pouzdan.
But we have to relativize this finding a little.
Ali svakako moramo malo da relativizujemo ovu tvrdnju.
Here you have the number of scrolls that have been found from each book in Qumran.
Ovde pored naslova biblijskih knjiga vidimo koliko je fragmenata sačuvano od koje knjige.
So from Genesis there apparently there were 17 scrolls in Qumran, Exodus also 17, Leviticus 12, Numbers 7 and of Deuteronomy there seem to have been 29 scrolls.
Dakle, kao što vidite, sačuvano je 17 svitaka ili fragmenata postanja, 17 izlaska, 12 knjige, levitske knjige, 7 brojeva i 29 ponovljenih zakona.
And if we compare these different scrolls or fragments from these different scrolls to one another, then we can see there are sometimes slight differences between them.
Ukoliko uporedimo međusobno ove sačuvane fragmente, onda možemo videti da ipak postoje određene razlike između njih.
So the best way to compare this is probably to modern Bible translations.
Najbolji način da ih uporedimo su verovatno savremeni biblijski prevodi.
So for example if you have five different Bible translations in German, they all differ a little bit from one each other, but it's still clear it's the same text that they display.
Tako ako uporedimo savremene nemačke prevode Biblije, možemo da vidimo da se svaki od njih, da se oni međusobno pomalo razlikuju, ali nam je jasno da se radi o istom tekstu.
So the letter seems not yet have been completely fixed in the second and first century BC.
Čini se dakle da sam tekst u drugom i prvom veku pre Hrista nije bio potpuno fiksiran.
So one example where we can see an important difference is for example in Genesis 22 where we have Elohim instead of Yahweh in the biblical text.
Jedna od tih razlika možemo naći i u postanju 22:14 gde se umesto Elohim nalazi Jahve u biblijskom tekstu.
This is important because in the traditional theory of the composition of the Pentateuch, the exchange between the different designations of God, Yahweh and Elohim, always played a role.
To je bitno zato što se u tradicionalnim
And here we can see that apparently there was some flexibility with regard to the use of these names of God.
Međutim, ovde možemo vidjeti da ipak postojala određena fleksibilnost u različitom korištenju naziva za Boga.
So these findings from Qumran show that apparently the biblical text that we have in the Codex Leningradensis is a meaningful starting basis.
Ovo nam sve govori da je tekst koji imamo sačuvan u Leningradskom kodeksu ipak dobra polazna tačka za dalje istraživanje.
The transmission between Qumran around 200-100 BC and the Codex Leningradensis 1000 AD was apparently quite trustworthy.
Na osnovu toga možemo reći da je da je tekst iz Qumrana iz 2. i 1. veka pre Hrista i Leningradski kodeks iz 1008. godine, da su poprilično slični, te da je Leningradski kodeks dobra polazna tačka.
We have only to reckon with some smaller differences.
Jedino moramo da obratimo pažnju na neke manje razlike.
But it's important to state there are no biblical texts from biblical times that have survived.
Ali je važno napomenuti da ne postoje biblijski tekstovi iz vremena samih autora koji su preživeli.
There might be one exception.
Moguće da postoji samo jedan izuzetak.
These are the silver amulets that have been found in Jerusalem in Ketef Hinnom.
Ovo su srebrne amajlije koje su nađene u Jerusalimu u Ketef Hinnom.
They are written on silver, they are very small.
Dakle, to su zapisi na srebru i jako su mali.
And they contain a version of a text that we also know from Numbers 6.
I na njima je ispisana verzija teksta koji mi poznajemo iz knjige Brojeva 6, 24-26 stih.
The so-called Aaronite blessing.
Takozvani Aronov blagoslov.
But the text is not completely close to the Bible, so we do not know whether this is simply a formula or whether it is really a quote from the biblical text.
Međutim, tekst nije u potpunosti isti kao biblijski tekst, tako da ne znamo da li se radilo o formuli ili o citatu ovog biblijskog odeljka.
So it might be an exception or it might not be an exception.
Dakle, može biti izuzetak, ali i ne mora.
So I come to my second chapter, socio-historical conditions for the development of the Pentateuch.
Sada prelazimo na drugi odeljak predavanja, gdje će profesor govoriti o istorijskim i sociološkim uslovima za razvoj.
Here I first would like to hint to a specific book that displays this very nicely, Christopher Rolston, Writing and Literacy in the World of Ancient Israel.
Na samom početku bih volio da ukažem na knjigu Christophera Rolstona, Pisanje i pismenost u drevnom Izraelu.
So Rolston first of all tells us what is important in order to understand the production of the Bible, that in ancient Israel only 5-10% of the population could even read and write.
Autor nam govori ono što je vrlo važno da znamo kada je reč o nastanku i produkciji biblijskih tekstova, a to je činjenica da je samo od 5-10% stanovništva bilo pismeno.
And literacy is quite a fluid concept.
A sama pismenost je poprilično fluidan koncept.
So it's something different whether I simply write a simple letter or whether I compose a narrative, for example, like the Joseph story.
Tako, dakle, možemo razlikovati nijanse pismenosti. Nije isto napisati jednostavno kratko pismo ili kreirati narativ kao što je Biblija.
So if we talk about 5-10%, 5-10% of the population being literate, it's probably more a modest literacy that can be presupposed.
Dakle, kada govorimo o brojici od 5-10% pismenih stanovnika, vjerojatno se misli na jako skroman nivo pismenosti.
There is, however, quite an interesting finding of the Israeli archaeologist Israel Finkelstein.
Postoji jedan zanimljiv nalaz izraelskog arheologa
Finkelstein. He examined the writing in the so-called Lachish letters.
On je analizirao pismo u zapisu Lachish.
These Lachish letters were being written on potsherds.
Lachish pisma su bila ispisana na
So these potsherds, so-called ostraca, they were often used in ancient times because broken pots could be used as writing materials.
Ovi komadi grančarija su često korišteni za pisanje jer to je bio način da se slomljena grančarija iskoristi za još neku namenu.
And these Lachish letters, they can be dated to the 7th and 6th century BC.
Pisma iz Lahiša se dakle mogu datirati u 7. odnosno 6. vek pre Krista.
And they stem from a military fortress.
One su pronađene u vojnoj bazi.
And what Finkelstein found out was that these letters were being written by at least 6 different persons. He could deduce this from the kind of handwriting.
Na osnovu različitih rukopisa Finkelstein je utvrdio da je makar 6 ljudi pisalo ova pisma.
So what he concluded was that among these soldiers must have been at least 6 persons who were able to read and write.
Na osnovu toga on je došao do zaključka da je među tim vojnicima bilo pismeno makar 6 ljudi.
So this might be a hint that at least in the 7th and 6th century that literacy became a little bit more widespread.
Ovo je pokazatelj da je možda u 7. i 6. veku stare ere pismenost bila malo više raširena.
So what I want to do now is to establish the time span in which the texts of the Pentateuch could have been written.
Ono što ću sada uraditi je da pokažemo period vremena u kom je tekst Petoknjižja mogao da nastane.
And here I would like to introduce two terms.
Sada ovdje ću uvesti dva termina.
And The one is the so-called terminus aquo.
Prvi je terminus aquo.
And this means the date or the point in time from which on the Pentateuch could have written.
To, ovaj termin označava početnu tačku, odnosno najstariji trenutak u kojem je Petoknjižje moglo biti napisano.
And the terminus atquem, this is the date up to which the Pentateuch must have been finished.
A drugi termin je terminus ad quem i on označava posljednji trenutak u kojem je Petoknjižje moglo biti napisano.
And if we determine these two terms, then we have the time span in which the Pentateuch probably was written.
Ako odredimo ova dva trenutka, onda period između njih jeste period u kojem je Petoknjižje moglo biti napisano.
And what I want to argue now is that this date from which on the Pentateuch was written is the 9th century BC.
Ono što ću pokušati da pokažem je da je ovaj dakle početni trenutak u kojem je Petoknjižje moglo nastati 9. vek pre Hrista.
And the date up to which the Pentateuch was written is the 4th century BC.
A da je drugi trenutak, dakle u kom je posljednji trenutak u kom je Petoknjižje moglo biti napisano 4. vek.
But I still would say the material of the texts of the Pentateuch can be older because they may have an oral prehistory.
Ali u svakom slučaju materijali koji se nalaze u Petoknjižju mogu biti stari zato što su postojali, verovatno postojali kao deo usmene tradicije.
What I can determine is only the somehow first written version of the text, the first written text.
Ono što jedino ne može da se odredi, to je prva pisana verzija teksta.
So now to the evidence for this claim.
Sada ćemo se osvrnuti na dokaze za ovu tvrdnju.
So here you can see just the amount of inscriptions that we have found by archaeological means in the land of ancient Israel.
Ovdje možemo vidjeti broj natpisa u različitim historijskim trenucima koje je arheologija uspjela da pronađe.
And you can see that there are only very few in the 10th century, very few in the 9th century, and then in the middle of the 8th century there is a jump.
Možemo vidjeti da postoji jako mali broj natpisa u periodu 10., 9. i prve polovine 8. veka, a da nakon toga vidimo jedan porast u broju natpisa.
Now one could of course argue this is the coincidence of the archaeological findings. It was a coincidence that more inscriptions dating to the 8th century were found than to the 10th century.
Naravno uvek može se reći da se radi o slučajnosti, dakle da su arheološka iskopavanja posvjedočila veći broj natpisa u 8. veku nego u 10.
But this argument doesn't hold true because in ancient Israel the archaeology was so serious that we actually can trust that the major findings are really found and that they are there. So this probably is really a speaking table.
Međutim, takva tvrdnja se ne može uzeti kao tačna zato što su arheološka istraživanja u Izraelu izuzetno ozbiljna i gotovo je pronađeno sve što se može pronaći, tako da možemo vjerovati ovim brojevima.
So what we can expect from this table is that apparently in the 8th century there was a dramatic development, even an explosion of the scribal culture.
Ono što možemo zaključiti na osnovu ove tabele je da je u 8. veku došlo do izuzetnog skoka u nivou pismenosti u drevnom Izraelu.
And if we look at the specific text from the 10th, 9th and 8th century, we can corroborate this.
I ako pogledamo u tekstove koji su zapisani u 10., 9. i 8. veku, onda možemo i obrazložiti ove tabele.
This is one of the oldest texts that we have in Hebrew, the so-called Gezer calendar.
Ovo je jedan od najstarijih tekstova koji imamo sačuvane na jevrejskom, takozvani kalendar iz Gezera.
And you can see that this is a very simple handwriting.
I možete vidjeti da se radi o vrlo jednostavnom rukopisu.
Here you have another potsherd from the Ophel, which is a specific neighborhood in Jerusalem, dating from the 10th century BC.
Također možete vidjeti na grančari jednostavan natpis iz 10. veka iz Jerusalima.
It's not even clear how to read this text, but again we can see it's a very simple and elementary text.
Čak nam nije u potpunosti ni jasno kako da pročitam ovaj tekst, ali je jasno da se radi o vrlo jednostavnom zapisu.
Here we have the so-called Baal inscription from Beit Shemesh.
Ovdje imamo takozvani Valov zapis iz Beit Shemesha.
And it is called like this because here we can read Baal.
I tako se zove zato što ovdje možemo da pročitamo Baal.
But you can also see such a author would not be able to write a much more elaborate text.
Ali nam je jasno da autor ovog zapisa nije bio u stanju da napiše neke komplikovanije tekste.
Here still a very simple text is the so-called ABCdery from Tel Zayit. An ABCdery is an ABC.
Također imamo i ovaj zapis iz Tel Zayita iz 10. veka, također veoma jednostavan.
Another 10th century text is the newly discovered ostracon from Hirbet Keyafa, which is located also quite close to Jerusalem.
I još jedan novo pronađeni fragment na ostraci iz Hirbet Keyafe, također iz 10. veka pre Hrista.
So one can see all these texts from the 10th century, they are very elementary and very simple.
Dakle, možemo zaključiti da su svi pronađeni tekstovi iz 10. veka izuzetno jednostavni.
And if we look in the 9th century, then the picture already really begins to change.
Ako pogledamo na zapise iz 9. veka, vidimo da se situacija već menja.
This is the so-called Mesha Stele.
Ovo je takozvana Mesha Stele.
Which already shows a much longer and much more diligent text.
Na kojoj vidimo dosta duži i dosta komplikovaniji tekst.
Or here you have a close-up of one of these Lachish letters that I already spoke. Here again you can see this is quite a fluid handwriting and it is well imaginable that someone who was trained like this was also able to write a larger text.
Ovdje vidimo fragment od jednog od pisama iz Lachisha iz 7. i 6. veka koje je već profesor pomenuo. I na njemu se vidi da je i rukopis dosta tečni i povezani i možemo da pretpostavimo da je autor ovog pisma bio u stanju da proizvede i neke komplikovanije i složenije tekstove.
And then we have also from the 8th, 7th and 6th century a lot of seals.
Također u periodu 8. 7. i 6. veka je sačuvano i dosta pečata.
It's a bit difficult to give a good number, but it might be between 150 to 1000 seals that somehow show that people somehow now were really more accustomed to write.
Teško je odrediti precizan broj sačuvanih pečata, ali čini se da ih je sačuvano od 150 do 1000.
And it's quite interesting that in some of these seals we have names, we can find names in the archaeology that are also known from the Bible.
Zanimljivo je da na nekim od ovih pečata možemo naći imena koja su već posvjedočena u biblijskom tekstu.
For example, these three names here.
Na primjer, ova tri imena koja se nalaze na slajdu.
There is unfortunately only one papyrus that survived from the monarchic period.
Nažalost, postoji samo jedan papirus koji je sačuvan iz perioda monarhije.
This is this papyrus which was also found in the region of the Dead Sea.
Ovaj papirus je također pronađen u oblasti oko Mrtvog mora.
But again, it's actually quite significant that it also dates to a date after the 9th, 8th century, to the 7th century.
Ali je važno zato što se on datira u periodu nakon 9. i 8. veka.
So already from the epigraphy we can actually see, apparently Israel became a scribal culture to an amount or an extent that larger texts were being produced around the 9th or 8th century BC.
Već na osnovu epigrafskih istraživanja možemo zaključiti da je drevni Izrael postao kultura koja je bila dovoljno pismena da proizvede složenije tekstove već u 9. i 8. veku pre Hrista.
And to the very same date also points the fact that from the 9th and the 8th century onwards, Israel and Judah are being named and mentioned in ancient Near Eastern documents.
Također je značajno da u periodu 9. i 8. veka imena Izrael i Juda su bila pominjana i u spisima okolnih naroda.
Because this shows from the 9th and 8th century on, Israel and Judah were being perceived as states.
To nam govori da su u periodu 9. i 8. veka pre Hrista Izrael i Juda bili već priznati kao države.
And if they are states, they also have an administration.
A ako su države, to znači da imaju svoju administraciju.
And if they have an administration, they also need scribal training.
A ako imaju administraciju, to znači da moraju da imaju obrazovane pisare.
So this points also to the 9th and the 8th century as somehow the date from which on actually the scribal culture is in a shape that larger texts can be produced.
Ovo nam također ukazuje na da je taj početni trenutak kada se razvija kultura pisara u drevnom Izraelu 9. i 8. vek pre Hrista.
A final element would be the observation of the prophetical books.
Posljednji element bi bio zapažanja zasnovana na proročkim knjigama.
It's quite interesting to see that we have a book of Isaiah, a book of Amos, a book of Hosea, Micah, a book of Jeremiah, but we don't have the book of Elijah.
Veoma je zanimljivo da da imamo knjigu Isaije, knjigu Amosa, knjigu Miheja i Jeremije, ali da nemamo knjigu proroka Ilije.
Elijah belongs to the 10th or 9th century. Isaiah belongs to the 8th century.
Ilija pripada periodu 10. i 9. veka, a Isaija pripada 8. veku pre Hrista.
And the easiest solution to explain why Isaiah has a book and Elijah doesn't have a book is that apparently between Elijah in the 10th or 9th century and Isaiah in the 8th century, there was this development of the scribal culture.
Najjednostavnije objašnjenje zašto ne postoji knjiga proroka Ilija, a postoji knjiga proroka Isaije, je da je da se u periodu između proroka Ilije i Isaije desio taj nagli razvoj pisarske kulture.
So, let's quickly repeat. We have three arguments that point to this 9th century as the beginning somehow of a scribal culture.
Ponovit ćemo još jednom, dakle, postoje tri argumenta koja svedoče u korist teze da je 9. vek početak nastanka.
First, the number and the quality of the inscription.
Prvo, broj i kvalitet natpisa.
Secondly, the fact that Israel and Judah are being perceived as states from the 9th century on.
Drugo, da su Izrael i Juda bili priznati kao države od perioda 9. veka pa nadalje.
And third, that apparently somehow the scribal prophecy also only starts with the 8th century.
I treće je da i same proročke knjige čini se da nastaju tek u periodu od 8. veka nadalje.
So this is our terminus from which on the Torah might have been written.
Ovo je dakle naša početna tačka od odnosno trenutak u kojem je Tora mogla da nastane.
But when was it finished? When did somehow the literary production in the Pentateuch come to an end?
Ali kada se ona završila? Još i dalje ne znamo trenutak kada je pisanje Biblije moglo biti završeno.
Here again we have a few indications. The first one is the translation of the Torah into Greek.
Ovdje također imamo nekoliko činjenica koje moramo da pogledamo. Prvo je trenutak kada je Septuaginta prevedena sa jevrejskog na grčki.
And we can quite safely assume that the Torah, which is the kernel of the Septuagint, was translated into Greek around 250 to 200 BCE.
Ono što možemo da pretpostavimo je da je Septuaginta, odnosno prevod Pentateuha, petoknjižja, nastao u periodu između 250. i 200. godine pre Hrista.
Each book of the Pentateuch had a different translator into Greek.
Svaka od knjiga petoknjižja je imala različitog prevodioca na grčki.
But the Septuagint clearly displays that apparently the Torah was already finished by 250 BC.
Ali Septuaginta nam svedoči da je do do tog trenutka 250. godine cela Tora već bila napisana.
A second argument that also somehow points into this direction that the Pentateuch probably was finished around the end or say around 300 BCE is can be gained from Chronicles, Ezra and Nehemiah.
Drugi pokazatelj da je Tora mogla biti završena oko 300. godine pre Hrista se nalazi u knjizi Dnevnika i u knjigama Jezre i Nehemije.
Because in Chronicles and Ezra and Nehemiah the Torah is being addressed as the Torah of Yahweh, the Torah of Moses, and it seems to be that here somehow the finished five books of Moses are being presupposed.
U ovim knjigama se Tora naziva Jahveva Tora ili Mojsijeva Tora i stičem utisak da se radi o jednoj već fiksiranoj grupi knjiga.
And Chronicles and Ezra and Nehemiah belong to the late 4th century BCE.
A znamo da ove knjige pripadaju u 4. veku pre Hrista.
And there is a final argument that also points in this direction, late 4th century as somehow the closure of the Torah.
Posljednji argument koji govori kao potvrda tezi da je Tora završena pre 4. veka.
And this is somehow that the Torah seems not to, doesn't seem to presuppose the downfall of the Persian Empire by the conquest of Alexander the Great.
A to je činjenica da izgleda da Tora ne pominje, odnosno ne zna za činjenicu za pad Persijske imperije pod osvajanjem Aleksandra Makedonskog.
The Persian Empire somehow was a stable empire during two centuries, from 539 to 333.
Čini se Persijska carevina je bila stabilna između 539. i 350. godine.
And after somehow Alexander the Great conquered the Persian Empire, the Persian Empire really fell into pieces.
A nakon Aleksandrovih osvajanja Persijsko carstvo se raspalo na komade.
And it seems that like the Bible interpreted this conquest of Alexander as a huge judgment of the world.
Pad Persijske imperije je Biblija poimala kao veliki sud nad svetom.
So in the Torah we can see that heaven and earth are conceived as absolutely stable units.
A u Tori možemo da vidimo da su nebo i zemlja posvedočeni kao apsolutno stabilni.
Heaven and earth, once created in Genesis 1, they will persist forever.
Nebo i zemlja stvoreni, čije stvaranje opisano u postanju, će postojati zauvek.
We have an example of this in Deuteronomy 30.
Imamo primjer ovoga u ponovljenim zakonima 30.
In Deuteronomy 30 we could see that somehow heaven and earth are being called as witnesses, which presupposes that they last forever.
Ovdje možemo vidjeti da su nebo i zemlja pozvani kao svjedoci, što znači da oni zaista postoje zauvijek.
Whereas outside of the Torah, we have the notion that heaven and earth also can somehow stumble down.
Dok izvan Tore imamo svjedočanstvo da nekako nebo i zemlja zapravo mogu da nestanu.
Here this text from Isaiah 34 is probably a Hellenistic text.
Tekst Isaija 34 je vjerojatno tekst iz helenističkog perioda.
And here you have the notion that the skies, the heaven rolls up like a scroll.
I ovdje vidimo dakle ovdje se kaže da se nebo savija kao svitak.
So it seems that somehow the Torah seems to presuppose still this very stable order of the Persian time.
Čini se da Tora dakle svedoči o ovom stabilnom periodu Persijskog carstva.
Whereas these Hellenistic texts presuppose the downfall of the Persian Empire under Alexander.
Dok helenistički tekstovi svedoče o već palom carstvu.
So again, let me quickly summarize.
Još jednom ćemo se osvrnuti na već izrečene argumente.
So the three arguments why the Torah probably was finished by the late 4th century, say around 340 BCE are.
Tri argumenta koje govore u prilog tome da je Torah napisana do kraja 4. veka pre Hrista su.
First, the translation of the Septuagint presupposes the finished Pentateuch around 250.
Prvi argument je da je prevod Septuaginte svedoči da je Tora bila završena pre 250. godine pre Hrista.
Chronicles presupposes the Torah as Torah of Yahweh or Torah of Moses at around 340 BCE.
Knjiga Dnevnika svedoči o nam govori o Jahveovoj Tori, odnosno o Mojsijevoj Tori, a ona je napisana oko 340. godine pre Hrista.
And the third argument is that the Pentateuch with its notion of the persistence of heaven and earth probably does not yet presuppose the downfall of the Persian Empire by the hands of Alexander the Great.
I treći argument je, kao što smo već rekli, da Tora razumeva nebo i zemlju kao stabilne kategorije, što govori da verovatno je napisana pre pada Perzijskog carstva.
So my third and final piece somehow wants to corroborate that the texts of the Pentateuch were written basically between the 9th and the 4th century, although there are earlier oral elements that are worked in, by looking at the political history of the ancient Near East of that time.
Treći deo predavanja će govoriti o istorijskim i političkim kontekstima samog nastanka teksta, za koji verujemo da je nastao između 9. i 4. veka pre Hrista.
And here another very fundamental principle of biblical exegesis needs to be taken into account.
I ovdje još jedan od osnovnih principa biblijske egzegeze mora biti uzet u obzir.
The Bible was written here in ancient Israel.
Tekst Biblije je zapisan ovdje u drevnom Izraelu.
And Israel is a very small entity in the ancient Near East.
A Izrael je jako mali entitet na Bliskom Istoku.
It's surrounded by the high cultures here in Mesopotamia and in Egypt that are much older and much more elaborate.
On je okružen mesopotamijskom i egipatskom kulturom koje su mnogo dominantnije i mnogo starije od njega.
So it's only to be assumed that texts that were written here were influenced by cultural influences from the Fertile Crescent, from Mesopotamia and ancient Egypt.
Dakle, logično je pretpostaviti da su tekstovi koji su napisani u Izraelu bili napisani pod kulturnim uticajem tekstova iz Mesopotamije i iz Egipta.
And we even have evidence that this was the case, that there was cultural transfer within this Fertile Crescent.
Imamo također i svjedočanstva da je da su ovi tekstovi nastali pod uticajem iz Mesopotamije i Egipta.
This is a fragment of the Gilgamesh epic, one of the classic pieces in Mesopotamian literature that was found in ancient Israel.
Ovo je jedan od fragmenata epa u Gilgamešu, klasika starog doba koji je pronađen u Izraelu.
And the archaeologist Israel Finkelstein even found out that this text was not brought from Mesopotamia to Israel, but that the clay stems from Israel itself.
Izraelski arheolog Finkelstein je čak utvrdio da ovaj tekst nije donet iz Mesopotamije, već da na osnovu sastava gline na kojoj je tekst napisan, da ona potiče iz samog Izraela.
This is another example of how closely actually the different areas in the Fertile Crescent interacted with one another.
Ovo je dobar pokazatelj toga koliko su različite kulture na ovom geografskom prostoru blisko sarađivale ili imali utjecaj jedan na drugu.
This is the famous Behistun inscription from ancient Persia dating to the late 6th century BC.
Ovo je čuveni Behistun zapis iz 6. veka pre Hrista.
And a copy of this inscription was found in an Aramaic translation in Egypt, 4,000 kilometers away.
A prevod ovog zapisa je pronađen na aramejskom jeziku u Egiptu nekih 400 km dalje.
So it's clear that there was interaction within the Fertile Crescent.
Ovo još jednom pokazuje koliko je dinamičan bio taj uticaj kultura.
And I now only want to show two examples where we can see that the Bible was heavily influenced, that the texts of the Hebrew Bible were heavily influenced by ancient Near Eastern ideologies.
Sada ćemo pokazati dva primjera na osnovu kojih se vidi koliko je tekst Biblije bio pod jakim uticajem bliskoistočnih ideologija.
And the first one pertains to the era of the Neo-Assyrian Empire.
Prvi primjer je vezan za period Novog Asirskog carstva.
The Neo-Assyrian Empire had a very specific ideology.
Neo-Asirsko carstvo imalo izuzetno specifičnu ideologiju.
And I can illustrate this ideology by means of this picture here.
I ova slika je dobra ilustracija te ideologije.
This shows the Assyrian great king and his subdues, the people he conquered.
Na njoj je prikazan vladar ovog carstva i njegovi potčinjeni koje je pokorio.
So the Assyrians were the first empire in world history who really wanted to establish something like a global empire.
Oni su dakle bili prva carevina u svjetskoj historiji koja je htjela da postavi neku vrstu globalnog carstva.
And they did that in so that they asked from the people they conquered that they exerted total loyalty towards the Assyrian great king.
Osim toga, oni su tražili od svojih podčinjenih potpunu pokornost ka njihovom kralju.
They did not only conquer the people, but they made treaties with them, and the treaties called these peoples into complete loyalty towards the Assyrian great king.
Oni dakle nisu samo pokorili različite narode, nego su sklapali sporazume sa njima, a deo tih sporazuma je podrazumevao potpunu poslušnost i lojalnost neoasirskom carstvu.
And these Assyrian vassal treaties, they always had the same structure.
I ovi ugovori su uvijek imali istu strukturu.
There was the introduction followed by the regulation and then an element of blessing and curse in case whether the regulations were being followed or not.
Dakle, struktura je izgledala ovako, uvijek je prvo išao uvod, zatim su išli zakoni, odnosno pravila koje se morala poštovati i na kraju se nalazi blagoslovi, odnosno kletve, u zavisnosti od toga kako bi se vazal ponašao.
And the interesting thing is now that we have one book in the Torah that exhibits exactly the same structure like these Assyrian vassal treaties.
Zanimljivo je da jedna knjiga Tore ima upravo identičnu strukturu kao i ova kao ovi ugovori.
So the book of Deuteronomy seems to have been modeled on this model of these Assyrian vassal treaties.
Čini se da je knjiga ponovljenih zakona upravo oblikovana po strukturi ovih mirovnih sporazuma.
But it is immediately evident that Deuteronomy is not simply a copy of the Assyrian vassal treaty.
Ali svakako je očigledno da knjiga ponovljenih zakona nije jednostavno kopija nekog od ovih sporazuma.
Because the contents completely changed.
Jer je sadržaj u potpunosti drugačiji.
The Assyrian vassal treaties, they demanded complete loyalty of the subdued people towards the Assyrian great king.
Ovi mirovni sporazumi Neoasirskog carstva su podrazumevali da potčinjeni imaju potpunu poslušnost prema Neoasirskom caru.
And the book of Deuteronomy completely transforms this idea.
Dok knjiga ponovljenih zakona u potpunosti menja ovu ideju.
And the book of Deuteronomy now says, yes, we are completely loyal, but not to the Assyrian great king, but to our God.
Tako knjiga ponovljenih zakona kaže da mi jesmo potčinjeni, ali ne asirskom caru, već Bogu.
So the book of Deuteronomy is a subversive reception of the Assyrian vassal treaties.
Tako dakle knjiga ponovljenih zakona predstavlja subverzivnu recepciju ovih neoasirskih mirovnih sporazuma.
I can illustrate this by two main texts from the book of Deuteronomy.
Ovo ćemo ilustrovati sa dva teksta iz knjige ponovljenih zakona.
The first is the famous first commandment of the Ten Commandments.
Prvi tekst je, dakle, prva zapovest od 10 zapovesti.
So if this text says, I am Yahweh your God, you shall have no other gods before me, then this is actually the same as if the Assyrian great king says, I am your king, you shall have no other kings.
Dakle, potpuno identično kao u mirovnim sporazumima sa neoasirskog carstva. U ponovljenim zakonima kaže, ja sam Jahve tvoj Bog i nećeš imati drugog Boga, dok u neoasirskim sporazumima kaže, ja sam tvoj kralj i nećeš imati drugog kralja.
So this is a very critical reception of Assyrian imperial ideology.
Ovo je dakle izuzetno kritička recepcija neoasirske ideologije.
Or you have another example, if you can read in the so-called Shema Yisrael, you shall love your Yahweh, your God, with all your heart and all your soul and all your might. Then this is also this also reflects the language of the Assyrian vassal treaties.
A drugi primjer je u knjizi ponovljenih zakona 6.4, to je molitva Ču Izraelju, koja također oslikava jezik koji je prisutan u vazalskim mirovnim sporazumima neoasirskog carstva.
Because the term love in the Assyrian vassal treaties is not an emotional term, it's a political term.
To je iz razloga što termin voleti nema emotivnu vrednost, već isključivo političku.
So the subdued people of the Assyrians, they also are required to love the Assyrian great king.
Pa tako, ljudi koji su počinjeni neoasirskom carstvu su također dužni da vole svog kralja.
Meaning, being absolutely loyal to him.
Što znači da budu apsolutno lojalni njemu.
And Deuteronomy 6 says the same of what Israel shall do with its God.
Na taj način, ponovljeni zakoni 6 govore šta Izrael treba da, kakav odnos treba da ima prema Bogu.
So we can clearly see that somehow the book of Deuteronomy apparently is written at the end of the Neo-Assyrian period and takes up the Neo-Assyrian ideology but radically transforms it.
Tako možemo da zaključimo da je knjiga ponovljenih zakona napisana negde pri kraju Neo-Asirskog carstva zbog toga što ona uzima za svoju osnovu Neo-Asirsku ideologiju koju kritički obrađuje.
And now I would like to present a final example, and this pertains to the Persian Empire.
Sada ću predstaviti posljednji primjer, a on se odnosi na Persijsko carstvo.
As I already mentioned, the Persian Empire was existent throughout two centuries in the ancient Near East.
Kao što sam već spomenuo, Persijsko carstvo je postojalo dva veka na Bliskom Istoku.
And this was a very stable period of political peace.
I ovo je bio veoma stabilan period političkog mira.
Why was this so?
Zašto je to bio slučaj?
Because the Persian had a very tolerant way of ruling over the people they subdued.
Jer su Persijanci imali izuzetno tolerantan način upravljanja ljudima koje su pokorili.
The Persians somehow let every people live according to their own customs, religions and cultures.
Persijanci su dopuštali svim narodima da žive prema po pravilima svoje kulture, religije i običaja.
This was not because some of the Persians already were early humanists.
To nije stoga što su Persijanci bili preveliki humanisti.
But it probably was simply political cleverness because otherwise such a big empire could not be ruled and held together.
Verovatno je da se radilo o političkoj spretnosti Persijanaca, jer ovako veliko carstvo verovatno ne bi moglo da opstane tako dugo.
But nevertheless, this somehow, so to speak, tolerant way of ruling over the subdued people was very much welcomed by the ancient Israelites.
U svakom slučaju ovako tolerantan način upravljanja svojim podčinjenima je bio izuzetno odobravan od strane drevnog Izraela.
There are many oracles against foreign nations in the Old Testament.
Postoji dosta proročanstava upućenih protiv drugih naroda.
But there is not a single one against the Persians.
Ali ne postoji ni jedno protiv Persijanaca.
Some of the theologians that wrote the Torah even were of the conviction that somehow with the Persian Empire history came to an end.
Neki od teologa koji su pisali Toru su čak bili ubeđeni da je persijskom vladavinom došao kraj sveta.
This is how God meant to rule over the world.
Ovo je kako je Bog, dakle, persijski način vladavine je to kako je Bog zamislio da se upravlja svetom.
Israel has its second temple, it can have its own religion, and it can entertain its culture.
Izrael sada ima drugi hram, može da praktikuje slobodno svoju religiju.
And probably one of the texts that is most clearly somehow reflects this Persian imperial ideology is the so-called Table of Nations in Genesis 10.
Jedan od tekstova koji vjerojatno dobro pokazuje ovu persijsku ideologiju jeste Postanje 10.
This Table of Nations describes the order of the world after the great flood.
U ovom tekstu se opisuje stanje sveta nakon velikog potopa.
And it is structured by means of three refrains.
Strukturisan je dakle u tri dela.
And these three refrains are here in 10:5, 10:20 and 10:31. These are the descendants of Japheth in their lands with their own language by their families and their nations. These are the descendants of Ham by their families, their languages, their lands and their nations. And these are descendants of Shem by their families, their languages, their lands and their nations.
Dakle, ova tri dela se nalaze u Postanju 10:5, gdje se govori o potomcima Japheta, njihovoj zemlji, njihovom jeziku, njihovoj porodicama i narodu. Isto to se govori u 10:20 za potomke Hama i isto to u 10:31 za Šemove potomke.
So, the fascinating thing about this text in Genesis 10 is that it apparently imagines the world as a pluralistic world.
Ono što je zanimljivo je da je slika sveta u Postanju 10 zapravo prikazana kao jedan pluralistički svet.
This is something new in the ancient world.
Ovo je nešto novo u starom svetu.
The Assyrians, for example, they expected actually from everyone that they in some way became also Assyrian.
Asirci su očekivali na određen način da svi počinjeni narodi postanu Asirci.
But in the Persian Empire it was clear every people could live according to its own customs.
Ali u persijsko vrijeme je bilo dozvoljeno da svaki narod živi prema svojim običajima.
And here the Bible took up positively this concept of the Persian imperial ideology.
I ovdje vidimo da se Biblija pozitivno odnosi prema toj persijskoj ideologiji.
So they reacted negatively to the Assyrian imperial ideology, but they took up positively the Persian imperial ideology.
Dakle, negativno su reagovali prema neoasirskoj ideologiji, ali su pozitivno reagovali na persijsku ideologiju.
But the constant thing is that they interacted with the imperial ideology of their neighbors.
Ali ono što je zajedničko je da su oni stupali u interakciju sa ideologijama okolnih sila.
So the Pentateuch can be compared in its literary growth to a cathedral.
Tako Petokinjižje se u svom literarnom rastu može uporediti sa katedralom.
Here you have the Cathedral of Syracuse in Italy.
Ovdje na slici vidimo katedralu u Sirakuzi u Italiji.
And this cathedral has a very interesting history.
I ova katedrala sa jako zanimljivom historijom.
As you can see here from this side, it originally was a Greek temple.
Kao što možemo da vidimo, ona je prvobitno bila grčki hram.
In early Christian time, it has been rebuilt to a basilica, so some of the spaces here between the pillars were filled up.
U ranokrišćansko vrijeme je taj grčki hram bio prepravljen u baziliku, pa je ovaj prostor između stubova bio popunjen.
In Muslim times, it was transformed into a mosque.
U muslimansku, za vrijeme muslimanske vladavine je ova bazilika bila pretvorena u džamiju.
And in the Renaissance and Baroque period it got this facade.
Dok je za vrijeme renesanse i u periodu baroka ona dobila ovaj spoljašnji izgled.
So it's a piece of artwork that reflects its history.
To je dakle komad umjetnosti koji oslikava njegovu historiju.
And I think the Pentateuch, the Torah, can be compared to such a building.
I smatram da Tora može biti upoređena sa ovakvom građevinom.
Also, the Torah grew over many centuries.
I Tora je također rasla i razvijala se tokom vekova.
And like we should not tear down this cathedral in order to restore the original Greek temple, we should not simply dig in the Pentateuch to find out what its earliest texts are.
Baš kao što ne bismo trebali da srušimo ovu katedralu kako bismo rekonstruisali grčki hram, isto tako ne bismo trebali ni da kopamo po petoknjižju kako bismo pronašli prvobitni tekst.
But if we look at the final shape of the Pentateuch, we can understand the Pentateuch better if we know its history.
Ali ako pogledamo u konačan oblik petoknjižja, mi ga možemo dosta bolje razumjeti ako znamo njegovu istoriju.
Uvaženi slušaoci, draga braće i sestre, bilo je ovo predavanje koje je napisao Toru profesora doktora Konrada Šmita. Vi dalje ostanite na talasima Radija Svetigora.